was a little girl who was about 4 years old who climbed up on Santa's lap, and he asked her the age-old question, "Sweetheart, what do you want for Christmas?" And she looked horrified. And Santa couldn't figure out what was going on, so he repeated the question, "Sweetheart, you need to tell me what you want for Christmas." And she gasped in horror, "Santa, does this mean you didn't get my email?" And don't all of us, adults, don't we wish that we could just fire an email off to Santa and have all of our shopping done, all the gifts purchased? I mean, how easy would that be? Instead of spending hours at the crowded mall. Yes, I sent Roy to the mall on Black Friday, and I see some of your pictures there, to the crowded mall, or sitting at our computers looking for perfect gifts for our loved ones. So, here's the question this first Sunday in December. How's everybody doing with their Christmas shopping? Okay, I heard it. I heard somebody say all done. So raise your hand if your Christmas shopping is all done. Admit who you are. Okay, I just have one thing to say. I like you anyway, okay? And honestly, I do. I love to buy Christmas gifts for family and friends. But, you know, we have to admit, sometimes it can get stressful. Does that look familiar to anybody? I mean, it's not just the shopping, but it's the wrapping, the decorating the house inside and out, planning meals, baking cookies, sending cards, and the list goes on and on. In an article reprinted in our December Wings, which I hope some of you have gotten a chance to read, and if not, I'd like you to read it after this lesson, it's entitled "Christmas, Testing Our Consciousness of Giving" by Eric Butterworth. And in it, he says that the problem for most people is that we allow Christmas traditions and family expectations to pressure us into slavishly erecting the facade of Christmas like a Hollywood set. Some of you are shaking your heads. I didn't ask for any admission here, but people are shaking their heads. Okay, you know, it's sort of like we think we have to create that Hallmark Christmas, right? And if you're interested, by the way, in doing research for this lesson, I discovered that on Pinterest, there are 1,000 ideas for how to make Christmas pajamas. So any of you are interested, it's on Pinterest. But here's what Butterworth says about all of our preparations. He says, the mistletoe and possibly even the Christmas tree are really quite likely plastic. More and more, the whole observance of this beautiful holiday becomes perfunctory and superficial. And actually, this is a season of preparation. It's no wonder why, a growing number of modern-day Scrooges cry out what? Bah, humbug. I'm sure none of you do that, but some people do get into that bah, humbug. So the question of the day is, how do we prepare for this sacred season without falling victim to the exhaustion epidemic or the Scrooge mentality? Well, maybe our problem is that we just are too focused on all the outer preparation and even the gift giving. Myrtle Fillmore wrote, "When we identify ourselves with all the outside things, the giving is empty." So perhaps in this season of Advent, we need to concentrate more on inner preparation. As Reverend Lee mentioned last week, Advent comprises the four Sundays before Christmas, and it's really a time of anticipation and preparation in the Christian calendar. The word Advent is from the Latin adventus, ad meaning to, and venere meaning come. So literally what it means is arrival, emergence, dawn, birth, expectation, anticipation. And this sacred season is about more than gift giving, Santa Claus, and all of our holiday traditions put together, as we all know. It's a time for our hearts to rejoice in the 2,000-year-old story of the birth of Jesus. And the next 2 weeks, the stories of the birth of Jesus, because there are different stories in the Bible, and we'll be looking at those specifically in the next 2 weeks. Today, however, I'd like for us to think of Advent as a time to make room in the end of our consciousness for spiritual understanding about the truth of our being. I want us to think about it as being a spiritual preparation, a time to prepare for and celebrate the rebirth of the awareness of our own divine nature, what Jesus came to teach, the Christ spirit within. Now, most of us think of the Christmas story. If I ask you to get the Bible and open to the Christmas story, almost everybody would look to the New Testament, wouldn't they? I mean, that's where we think of it being. However, Unity Minister Ed Rabel suggests that the story really begins with the very first words in the Old Testament, which we studied when we did the creative process. So I know you all know what they are, right? I'm not going to test you. But he says, in the truest sense of the word, the Christmas story begins with the words, and they will be familiar to you. What? In the beginning, God created. Because every metaphysical idea presented in the Hebrew Bible leads us one step nearer to the advent of the Gospels and the birth of Jesus of Nazareth. And in the book of Isaiah, we find an even more direct prophecy of the Christmas story. Isaiah says, you know, millennia before Jesus came to earth, he says, "Therefore, the Lord himself gave you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel." And the hymn we just read had the word Emmanuel in it. And Emmanuel means, actually, God be with us, not God be around us, not God be separated in the heavens someplace, but God be with us personally. And later in Isaiah, in chapter 9, verse 6, we get a preview of the nature of what Isaiah thought the coming Messiah would be like. He wrote, "For a child is to be born for us, a son given to us. Authority shall rest upon his shoulders, and he shall be named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Now, Isaiah's words are especially striking when we remember that the early Hebrews of the time when this was written were expecting the Messiah to be a warrior king to defeat all of their enemies. They were not expecting a Prince of Peace. And even more interesting is the fact that the equivalent of these same words can be found in many other world religions, some far older than the Hebrew. Ed Rabel says, "The messianic prophecies are not just limited to the advent of our historical Jesus, but they contain a universal idea, true for all people of all times, an awareness of oneness with God, through what we in Unity call the Christ, but other religions have given it different names, and it's the same thing." So moving into the New Testament, finally, we find that the details of the birth of Jesus are only in two of our four Gospels. Mark begins his Gospel with Jesus' baptism, way after the birth, and John does not include any details about the Nativity at all, except the writer of John goes beyond the facts and gives us a sweeping overview of the greatest story ever told. And you all will be familiar with 1 John. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." So in the beginning was the Word, and the Greek word for word was logos. Logos is the divine light, the living Word that contains all potentiality, the infinite spiritual power of God made flesh, the Christ that Jesus fully embodied and demonstrated for us all. And Bible scholar Ed Townley says, from those very first verses of John, which deliberately echo the beginning of the book of Genesis, it is clear that the Word, the light that shines in the darkness, is the Christ. The Christ is the indwelling, immediate presence and power of God that is the true identity of every person. And so when we understand Word to be Christ, the truth of our spiritual oneness with God, that passage just becomes a ringing affirmation of our innate oneness with all that God is. I want us to remember that as we read and talk about the Christmas story the next 2 weeks. So Eric Butterworth in the Wings article writes, "Whatever may be your perception of the greatest story ever told, one thing is certain, it is the story of the greatest gift ever given. It is the ultimate gift, then, of the indwelling Christ." And in John 3:16, a familiar verse, we read, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only," and some verses say only begotten Son, "so that everyone who believes in him may not perish, but have eternal life." Now, this verse has been interpreted by traditional Christianity for centuries to refer to Jesus as the only begotten Son. But Ed Townley explains, metaphysically, we understand that Son is the equivalent of the Word in John 1:1. It describes the Christ, the creative energy of divine omnipotence, omniscience, and omnipresence that is God individualized in each one of us. It is the Christ, the Word, the creative empowerment of our divine source, sent into the world for us to continue the creative process. In unity, we fully embrace and accept the divinity of Jesus Christ, and we fully embrace and accept the Christ potential within all humankind. The parish priest and medieval mystic Eckhart, who we associate with a prayer quote, also said, "God never begot but one Son, and the eternal is forever begetting the only begotten." Now, it takes a while to get your head around that. I'm going to say it one more time. God never begot but one Son, but the eternal is forever begetting the only begotten. Eric Butterworth reminds us that this is the magic key to really understanding John 3:16. The only begotten is that of you that is only begotten of God. It is your spiritual essence. Now, I know we may have human parents, and we have a human identity, and we're begotten from our parents. And we're begotten, we might say, from some influences of heredity from our parents. But there is a spiritual you that is only begotten of God. And God so loved the world and so loved all of humankind that he gave you, each one of you, an individualized expression of God's self expressing. And in the words of another medieval priest and mystic, sometimes we think in modern era that we figured all this out, but if you go back and read some of these mystics of the Middle Ages, they had really figured it out long ago. And this one is named Angelus Silesius. He actually named himself that. He had another name. And it's one that we know and have heard. Though Christ 1,000 times in Bethlehem be born, if he's not born in thee, thy soul is all forlorn. So Jesus came to this world to show us that all of us have the power within to release our Christ energy and to realize our spiritual potential. And during the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said in Matthew 5, verses 14 to 16, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hillside cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl," the King James Version said, "put it under a bushel. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." So as we move through this Advent season, a busy time for sure, but let us follow the spiritual mandate that Jesus gives us. When Jesus tells Nicodemus and us, "You are born anew," he is telling us that we must be reborn to the awareness of the Christ within, to the awareness that we are created in the image and likeness of the divine, of our divine parent. And it is our mission on this earth to be God's expression. And that means something really important for all of us in our daily lives. It means that no matter what temporary challenges we might face on this physical plane. We can always draw on the attributes of life, love, and light within us. Healing, prosperity, peace can all be brought forth as we realize the greater potential of our divine essence. Jesus told us, believe when you pray, believe you have received it, and it will be yours. And so God is centered in us, as Eric Butterworth says. Realize that God is centered in you, and we know that with God, one of the slogans of the chaplain program, with God, all things are what? Possible. All things are possible. And so as we celebrate and rejoice in the birth of Jesus, born in that manger 2,000 years ago in that little town of Bethlehem, let us remember that we too, every single one of us, are on that journey to Bethlehem, ready to give birth to a new creative expression of what we were created to be on this earth. And in this consciousness, in the busyness of the season, let's remember that with every gift we give and every gift we receive, it's a physical representation of the light we are and the love we share with everybody, with our family, with our friends, with others. And so in this sacred Advent season, as we joyfully anticipate and celebrate the birth of Jesus, let us enter into a new realm of awareness, knowing that all of our outer preparations are symbolic of preparing our own souls for receiving the ultimate gift, the gift of the indwelling Christ. This is the eternal gift of oneness with God, and it is a gift the world can neither give nor take away. Jesus said, I am with you always. The Christ is with you always. And so during this blessed season, as we receive this precious gift, then we allow all that God is to flow through us, bringing the world much needed wholeness, hope, peace, love, and joy. And so it is. So let's take a moment now to just affirm the power and presence of the divine. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.